This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, hour two rolling along this morning. Glad you could be with us on a Wednesday, the deadest sports day of the year, but we still got a lot to get to. All-Star game last night, second half of the baseball season. The ESPYs will be tonight if you're into that kind of thing, but we are getting closer and closer to football season, and we are doing the New England Patriots in our season preview. We are doing the AFC East this week. Buffalo was on the clock in day one. Yesterday, the Miami Dolphins. Today, the New England Patriots, one of the premier franchises in all of sports. When you look at dynasties across the entire landscape of American sports, the Patriots probably are the most impressive given the circumstances of their times. You can talk about the Yankees winning a lot of World Series at a particular moment in history, the Celtics winning NBA championships, the Canadians winning, but try to find some team that had to continually build in a salary cap sport over and over again with teams building to beat them, and yet they continued to win championships and compete for championships. Yes, they had the greatest quarterback of all time that they don't have anymore, but it's one of the premier franchises ever put together in the history of American sports. And I will say it is something that we will look back on, as we've said a number of times. I think that history will lighten our feelings for the Patriots as we get older and history puts that 20-year period way back in the rearview mirror. There's a lot of hatred for this team. There's a lot of anger at this team. People are getting really sick of them. And a lot of people enjoyed a little bit of, hey, you know what? They're not the top dog anymore. Tom Brady's gone, right, et cetera. They got a rookie quarterback now, and maybe they'll struggle. Well, they won 10 games, and they made the playoffs. And even though Buffalo blew them out in that playoff game, they did make the playoffs when other teams without rookie quarterbacks didn't make the playoffs. That being said, the New England Patriots have a lot to look at this year. There is a Dolphins team that is built to win today. There's a Bills team that is ready to go to a Super Bowl. Those are just two teams in their division. That is a conference that has got talent up and down. Where exactly are they when you look at the way the AFC is constructed right now? We'll talk about them as the show progresses, but we got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up. It's brought to you by Verizon. It's Tony D, Ron Culver. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Glad you can be with us.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, it's the good, the bad, and the dumb. I'm going to miss this so much when you're on vacation. It's ridiculous.
That's right. I'm going to collect a lot of stories. And when I come back,
we're going to have like 2 weeks
But when I come back, we'll have a 3-hour good, the bad, the dumb.
We should do a whole show.
Yeah, first hour good, second hour bad, last hour dumb.
Exactly.
That's the only thing to do.
It's brought to you by Verizon with their newest unlimited plan, Everyone's Welcome. Introducing Welcome Unlimited from Verizon for just $30 a line per month for 4 lines with auto pay plus taxes and fees. Our best priced unlimited plan ever. For real, $30 a line for the whole family. The network you want, the price you love. Switch to Verizon today. Paper-free billing required. Unlimited 5G nationwide 4G LTE. In times of congestion, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. All smartphone lines on the account must be on Welcome Unlimited and are eligible only for select promotions. Includes domestic talk, text, and data usage only. Data roaming at 2G speeds. All right, what is the good of the day?
It's a first for us. At least I think it's a first.
Oh, good.
Because, I mean, we've been doing this for a long time now. I don't think we've ever done this. And how it coincides with this hour is pretty remarkable as well. Because the good of the day goes to our good buddy, Connor O'Gara.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've checked out his videos of these hard-hitting questions he's asking SEC coaches.
No. What is he doing?
Oh, these are fantastic. These are the questions we need answers to because he's getting real answers. So I have this one here. I need you to listen to because this is a question. You're going to hear Connor's voice first, and then you're going to hear Lane Kiffin give his response.
Okay.
Lane, I saw that you signed a mustard bottle earlier. Have you signed a lot of those in the last 9 months?
I did sign a mustard bottle. That was the first guy to come up, which I think he had Alabama shirt on, so I was a little confused there. And so, yes, I've signed a lot of mustard balls and golf balls, which normally I haven't. So it's been a unique offseason.
Okay, we're going to stay over in that.
And I'd like to say on the golf ball, which goes back to the first pitch, which you know I threw out for the Tennessee game, and we got swept by Tennessee and didn't play well, and everybody thought it was my fault. I had a plan. I wanted our guys to stay humble and not play very well, and then we'd go win the national championship in baseball. So I'd like to say that was a plan. So all the Tennessee fans that were all excited about sweeping us, there was a plan.
That was brilliant. That is brilliant. Good job, Lane Kiffin, man. That is great stuff.
But it's all Connor. Yeah. Connor doesn't ask that question. We don't get that awesome soundbite.
Who else would ask that question?
Right. No one.
Yeah, no one.
I have one more. Okay. I couldn't resist because we love when this guy ever goes on a tangent. I don't know if you know what SEC coach I'm talking about that goes off on a fun, wild road of like, where are we going?
Nick Saban?
No.
Mike Leach.
Mike Leach.
Yes.
And Connor asks a very important question that we want to know the answer to. People post this question on Twitter all the time. Connor just is just helping us out.
Sankey said that you have some Netflix recommendations. Would you be willing to share those with us?
Yeah, I wish I'd watched more Netflix lately, and I haven't. Somebody said I need to watch The Terminal List, which I haven't watched it yet. The Hidden Gem, which I think I said it last year, Operation Odessa, that documentary, you need to watch that, about these international criminals that try to buy a submarine for Pablo Escobar. That's worth watching. I wish I could tell you I'd watched more Netflix. I haven't watched a lot lately. And during the season, it's good to watch, to kind of get your head straight. But I did. I'm up to date on Better Call Saul. I'm up to date on Yellowstone. I'll tell you, that's part of it. The kids got me into Stranger Things, and I'm certainly not ready for this season. I'm about halfway through. I don't know. So if you guys have any good recommendations, I could probably use them. I guess I'll defer to the numbers here.
He's a national treasure, isn't he? He's a national. Now, I want to compare that to about 10 years ago, a little over 10 years ago, when Will Muschamp, who at the time was the head coach of the University of Florida, was asked about his facing Nick Saban, and it was asked if this was a Jedi Padawan thing, and Will Muschamp went, "Oh, is that a Star Wars reference? Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I saw Empire Strikes Back when I was a kid. I didn't watch the rest of the way." Compare the two. Because Will Muschamp was clearly lying.
Yeah.
When he said he was a kid and watched Empire Strikes Back and didn't watch Return of the Jedi. Clearly lying.
So he doesn't know
what he was afraid of.
If Darth Vader is actually Luke's father or Darth Vader was just
lying. Didn't care what happened to Han Solo and the carbonite. Didn't care what happened to Luke's hand.
Right?
He didn't care. He went because I remember pointing this out at the time. I'm like, Will Muschamp and I are about the same age. I couldn't wait for Return of the Jedi to come out in 1983. I had to wait 3 years for the movie to come out. Will Muschamp apparently same age as me. We could have played together as kids. We could have played with our Star Wars toys as kids if we lived in the same neighborhood. Apparently, he went, I'm good. I don't need this anymore. I need to break down 3-4 defenses, so I'll see you. Will Muschamp was so afraid to admit that he liked anything outside of football. He wanted to be football guy, right? I got no time for stranger effects or thingies or whatever you guys are calling that. I don't even know what that is. It's like when coaches go, when Bill Belichick was like, oh, that Insta Facebook thing, or like an Insta book.
Yeah.
He knows exactly what that is, but he doesn't want to admit he knows what that is. Mike Leach has no problems going, I absorb everything. I have a life outside of this. I watch Netflix.
Oh, God. Did you hear? He said it's good to watch it during the during this season. Just to get your head straight. And you know what? I guarantee every single coach is that way because you can't live football 24/7. Exactly.
But you don't want to say that, though. Like, you don't want to go, hey, I have a life outside. I'm not watching game film with my, you know, I'm not Kurt Russell in Miracle playing Herb Brooks watching film of the Soviets while my wife's cooking dinner and it's going to be cold because I can't leave this room. You want to project this image to everybody that the only thing you care about is delivering you a winning product. Even my family, my kids' names, I don't even know how old they are. Yep. I love football so much. And Mike Leach is like, I'm caught up on Better Call Saul. I'm caught up on Yellowstone. My kids are getting me into Stranger Things. I haven't caught up on that.
I'm only halfway through, but so he's not ready for this season yet.
By the way, Terminal List is not on Netflix. It's on Amazon Prime. But who cares? He wants to watch it. That's treasure. Connor, well done. We can't wait to talk to you in 20 minutes. What's the bad of the day?
Bad of the day is an Argentinian soccer player getting hit in the face by a fish.
And then, how did that happen?
And then needing to be carted off the field. Somebody threw a fan threw a fish at him. I don't care about that. What I care about is that the fish grazed his face, didn't permanently kill him. You know, or maim him forever. But he had to be carted off the field. And this is why soccer is not going to make it in America.
We don't put up with that.
I mean, it's
you
a
flop
fish.
In the NBA, we go crazy on you.
I mean, first of all, you know, let's give it up to the fan. I'm impressed that you even thought about smuggling a fish into the stadium.
Yeah, well done.
You know, I don't know how you go about doing that. Like, you just wake up one morning, got tickets to a game. It's like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to bring a fish into the stadium and throw it at the player.
It's amazing when they go through security and they're like, what's this? It's a fish.
It's a fish.
Sure, go right on
it's
in.
It's lunch.
What are you doing with that? I don't know.
I mean,
all right, fine, take it in.
You watch this video. The fish hits him in the face. But to be carted off the field, come on.
That's humiliating, man.
That's worse than getting hit in the head by a fish.
That's awful.
So, yeah, I can't stand seeing that. It's just that flopping nonsense that, oh, my God, I'm permanently injured. I'm down for the count. Sub me out, coach. Yeah. I got hit by a fish.
That happens. The flopping happens in the NBA, and people go crazy. Like, there's video of people not even getting touched and them falling to the ground. And there's plenty of videos of soccer players doing the same thing.
I'll die on this hill saying it started in soccer.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons why I can't stand Argentina, because they're the kings at it.
Is it because, and again, is it strategic?
It's strategic.
I really
you want to try to get a card. It all started with, you know, it's like, hey, you know, if you get grazed in the penalty box, go down. Let's get a penalty kick.
Yeah, because goals are hard to come by. So you might as well try to get one as soon
or,
as
you
can.
Or, you know, just outside the box, you know, it's like, hey, let's try to get a free kick here. And then, you know, it depends on how much you're rolling around. I mean, famously, Ronaldo did that to his teammate, Wayne Rooney. And Wayne Rooney was issued a red card. And this happened during a World Cup. And they were teammates at the time. They're both playing for Manchester United. But Wayne Rooney laid a tackle on Ronaldo. Ronaldo, you know, died on the field, apparently, to the point that Wayne Rooney received a red card.
Oh, wow.
And got kicked out of the game. And, you know, Portugal went on to win the game.
Wow.
Crazy. So, but I mean, yeah, it happens all the time. So I can't stand it.
All right, what's the dumb of the day then?
That sounds like a dumb of the day. But it was bad because, you know, it's ruining soccer for a chance in this country. It's like we're trying to climb this ladder, man. You know, but anyways, the dumb of the day is autograph guy at the MLB All-Star Game. I don't know if you saw this.
There's a viral video
going through. Now, yeah, I will say this: if he's trying to do this for a kid, I fully respect this old man. Not an old man. I mean, he's probably our age. You know, pushing and shoving his way to get an autograph. If he is not doing this for a kid, come on, dude.
Well, this is a really tough story.
It is.
Because there's a couple of things. I was really, really interested in this. I don't know why I was. But I saw it trending on Twitter last night. And I went, okay, I try to look. There's the initial reaction, which is, this is crazy.
Yeah.
Right? You know what this reminds me of? And I'll go on quick. It reminds me of, there's a famous picture of kids in a museum looking at their phones while this beautiful art is on the wall.
Right. Right?
There's this famous picture. And everybody uses this as, our generation is gone. They're gone. The phones have taken over. They can't even appreciate this art in a museum. The only thing they care about is their phones. This is awful. We're all doomed. And then somebody pointed out, no, that's not exactly what you're seeing. What you're seeing is, a teacher said, look up this artist. This is who did this, and was asking them questions about the artist. And the kids were looking up the answers on their phone. They were Googling the artist, and they were all, it was an assignment.
Right.
And somebody took a picture and said, no, it's not that. They're all on Instabook, InstaChat, right? Or whatever that Bill Belichick wants to call it.
Snapface.
Right. Exactly. They don't care about art. No. They don't. And people didn't believe it. They said, no, it's true. These kids were in this museum, and the teacher gave them an assignment to learn more about the artist. And they went on their phones and looked up the artist to answer the questions. Same thing here in a way. You're right. You're 100% right. That was an angle I actually didn't think about. Let's say he's got a kid in a wheelchair that right. loves Justin Verlander, and he can't get the kid to the line. And he's like, I got to get Justin, because it was Justin Verlander, right? That was getting, he was trying to,
I'm not sure. That's what people were saying, but
you don't see the player.
Yeah.
But I think it was Justin Verlander, but if it's not, forgive me. Let's say
it's
he's
an MLB
trying,
player.
Let's say he's trying to get that autograph for his son in a wheelchair.
Right.
He's desperate. He wants his kid to be happy. All the other kids get to be right up at the rope. His son can't be at the rope. Maybe it is, I sell these things on eBay. Get out of my way, child. Mm-hmm. Daddy needs to make some money. Then that's another angle. But then somebody pointed out, and I don't know if this is true at all, but somebody was pointing out that this is something that's on a TV show.
Yeah, I saw that in Practical Jokers.
Practical Jokers, like, this might have been a bit for a television program. And I was like, okay, there's three things. Yours is the third that now I have to process with this video. What exactly
I'll
is
throw
this?
A fourth one, because I saw another comment that,
okay,
that was, you know, adults are a fan of these guys too. Why can't an adult get an autograph? And for me, that was, you know, the only thing I was thinking. I was like, well, I guess you can go the traditional way and wait in line at a autograph signing, or
pay money. Yeah, like, hey, for $250, you can get a picture and an autograph. You can go do that.
But I mean, you know, there's the thrill seeker for adults too. They're like, oh my god, my star's right here.
I want to believe it's a crazy lunatic fan being rude because it's a funnier story,
right,
or it's a better story. But
I would hate
to be that guy and then find out he has a disabled son.
Or just a 3-year-old or a 4-year-old who loves the game. You know, he may not know who the ball player is, but would love to get an autograph.
Exactly.
I remember, when we've had people come into the studio, I've gone with my kids and said, here, can you, and it looks like I'm asking for the autograph for them. But it's like, no, this is for my son.
Exactly.
You know, he was a huge baseball player, and he has them displayed in his room.
All right. That's the good, the bad, and the dumb. Again, brought to you by Verizon. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us. Connor O'Gara is going to join us, the superstar reporter at the SEC Media Days. Well done. By the way, Lane Kiffin talked about the golf ball. Also, mustard bottles were thrown when the Ole Miss played Tennessee. So things were thrown on the field, including mustard bottles. That's why he was asked to sign that. So,
that's another
Tennessee
one.
Tennessee fans just love him, I guess.
But, I mean, why mustard?
Yeah, I know. Who brought a mustard bottle to a game to throw it? Unless it was, it might have been the mustard bottle that's just kind of sitting on the, like, hey, get a hot dog and here's some ketchup and mustard bottles.
But don't they usually have the pump things?
Yeah, I thought they would have the pump things. I didn't think they were actual bottles of mustard that you could pick up and use. But maybe somebody found it that way, because who brings mustard to a football game?
And
unless
then,
you're
and
bringing
then
your own stuff,
it.
I guess. I don't know. But then they went, I don't need this anymore. I'm going to chuck it at Lane Kiffin. But that was good trolling, because Tennessee was the number one baseball team in the country pretty much the entire season. In fact, I made the bold prediction, because I'm a genius, that Tennessee would win the national championship because I didn't see anybody beating them twice. They were eliminated in super regional play by Notre Dame. So again, your, you know, humble reporter here, always right with his sports takes. Tennessee let me down. But Ole Miss won the national championship, and he got the ultimate troll. Tennessee swept Ole Miss during the regular season, but Ole Miss ended up winning the national title. That's a good job. Lane Kiffin is one of my favorite people in sports. It's not that I like him or respect him. I think he's done a magnificent job. It's that for some reason he's got the craziest career arc of like anybody in coaching. Like there are certain people in certain industries, and I'm sure no matter what industry you're in, there's always like that. You always hear about that one guy that they can't get enough opportunities, right? They're like a vice president at 32 or whatever. And you're like, how in the world did that happen? Is his uncle on the board of directors? What are we doing here? Lane Kiffin was like that. It's like people could not give Lane Kiffin jobs fast enough. No matter what he did, no matter how he acted, no matter what, they just couldn't help themselves. Lane Kiffin had to be, and he just, now he's at Ole Miss, and Ole Miss is playing well, and good for him. You know, you brought up, we were talking about that autograph guy. And you know what? I think anybody who's a parent has gone through this before, where you really want your kid to get that autograph, like when they're at a sporting event. And I hope it's the, I'm just a crazy adult fan that's pushing kids out of the way, because I think that deserves the scrutiny. But if he's doing it for his kid, like there's an understandable. I remember when my daughter and I went to the PGA Championship in like 2016. It was a Baltusrol in New Jersey. And my daughter liked Jordan Spieth a lot. Like, she just liked Jordan Spieth. And I remember we were in the gift shop, and she found one of those big like golf balls.
Yeah.
And she's like, look at this, Dad. Like, players could sign this. And I'm like, well, guess what? Dad's got to buy it now, because that's something we can get the guys to sign it. And so we went out, and we were at the practice greens and whatnot, and players would come by, and they would see her and a bunch of other kids, and they would stop by and they'd sign it. And she got a bunch of autographs, but she wanted Jordan Spieth's. And Spieth was on the practice range, and he came walking over, and all the kids, of course, were going crazy. And my daughter was in this group of kids, and Spieth came over to the kids, and he was taking their stuff. And this guy was pushing and pushing and pushing to get close to Spieth. And I didn't know if he was doing it for his kid who couldn't be there. I didn't know what it was, but I was pushing him back. I'm like, don't cut in front of my daughter to get, like, he's not signing forever. Like, he's got to go play. And so I was really nervous, and I was really worried that she wouldn't get the autograph, because this adult was plowing his way through the children to try to get some, because Spieth wasn't really looking. He was just grabbing stuff and signing. He didn't know who it was even for, but luckily he grabbed my daughter's golf ball and signed it, and she has it. And that like made me feel good as a parent, because I would have felt horrible if she had got that close and she's sticking the ball out and he doesn't sign it because some guy pushed it. So I kind of hope that's not the story, but I at the same time, he's getting kind of barbecued on social media, right? I mean, he's getting, they're trying to find out who he is, and they're doxing him and all that.
I know.
We're crazy.
I mean, he does look like one of the guys from Impractical Jokers.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I don't know. It's not a good look. And that's why, I mean, hopefully somebody has a side video of him walking to a younger kid who, you know, would have gotten swallowed up by that crowd. Because a lot of preteen, teen kids that are in that area, they're much taller, much bigger. And, you know,
it is crazy.
5-year-olds or 4-year-olds going to be intimidated.
It's so crazy. We are such a camera first society without really, we don't even care what the story is. We just want to make, you know, I was, I'll make an admission. A year ago, I was in a sandwich shop, and I got in an argument with the employee. Like, we had a legitimate argument back and forth. And I remember leaving going, I'm glad nobody taped that. Like, there was hardly anybody in the restaurant, but I was like, somebody could have just taped that, because somebody could have heard a commotion and went, I'm throwing my phone on, without any knowing any of the context of how rude that the employee was to us, and I was defending us and whatnot. And it was just over the sandwich.
Or they edit it.
Yeah, they edited it to make me look like the jerk, right? Yeah, and then everyone's like, you know.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, SEC Media Day is going on in Atlanta. That means the season is coming up pretty soon. Yes, it's expanding later on down the road, but SEC, they love themselves some football. Connor O'Gara, Saturday down south. He's the big star, big media star, because we played his clips in Good, the Bad, and the Dumb. He's on a Progressive guest line. Progressive Insurance, making bundling home and auto easy. Learn more at progressive.com. Well done, my friend, on those questions to Lane Kiffin and Mike Leach. Well done.
Appreciate that. You know, we got to have a little bit of fun here. So a little birdie gave me a tip that Mike Leach had some interesting Netflix choices. And let's just say he's a big Outer Banks guy. So a little birdie tipped me off to that information on Monday. And then when Sankey started his intro by saying that Leach had some recommendations for Netflix, but he hadn't shared those, that was my cue. I was like, all right, it would have been even better if it had been the first question. But you know what? We got to take those opportunities when they come.
Yeah, absolutely. And we were just talking about it. Some of these guys, they never want to share anything outside of football. They want to pretend like they don't even know what anything else is in the world. And Leach seems like the opposite. He seems like, nope, there are movies, there's TV shows, there's all this other stuff I'm interested in other than the X's and O's of the game. That's why he's kind of refreshing.
Right. You know what? It's a balance, I think. He did talk about how he hasn't been as into Netflix. Which, look, if you're a coach on a $5 million contract and you have 50 Netflix recommendations,
yeah.
Maybe that's a little bit troubling. Maybe that's a little bit troubling, but you know what? He found the balance, I thought.
All right, so again, I want to ask this in all seriousness. I know what these coaches are there for. I know none of them are going to say, look, we're going to not be that good. We're not going to win five games. We're going to look at a struggle. This was a down year. It's going to be a down year. They all want to pump up their program. We get it. But is there anything else that they give? Do you extrapolate any really good information than just the normal? We're just excited about the season and all and everything that comes with that.
I think there's something to be said for the way that coaches approach media days. I thought last year Kirby Smart was about as free and as confident as I had seen him as a head coach. The fact that it coincided with a national championship season, Georgia's first in 41 years, I don't know how directly those things are related, but I did remember thinking back to like, wow, Kirby really looks like he's in his element, and which, you know, he should. He was in year six. But I do think there's something to be said for an approach that a coach takes at media days. Lane is about as transparent as it comes when it comes to all things NIL. We know that. He talked about the need for a salary cap. Every coach seems like they have the same overarching opinion when it comes to NIL, though they're admittedly a bit hopeless. And, you know, I think that there's a difficult line to walk because you don't want to be anti-NIL, but at the same time, you need to be able to voice your concerns. I like Eli Drinkwitz's perspective. Just on NIL, but just overall, I think he's somebody who kind of understands the way that this league is at its best. I love that Eli Drinkwitz loves to bust chops, though. No Dan Mullen here, so he didn't necessarily get his jabs in. But I just think that coaches can all have kind of those different perspectives coming in here. And yeah, they might not say the most meaningful things, but at the same time, I do think that there are definitely some takeaways with what each one of them says.
With USC and UCLA going to the Big Ten and now Texas and Oklahoma going to the SEC, right now, I mean, those are the two mega conferences, but the SEC probably has the upper hand in being able to puff up their chest a little bit. How much of that is prevalent in Atlanta? How much of the, and again, I know the SEC, it matters more, all of that, but how much of the, we really are the top dog right now, we know it?
Greg Sankey talked about no panic. He said, no panic. There is no reaction to what the Big Ten did with USC and UCLA. He was at his lake house on summer vacation, and then he's like, guess summer vacation's over. But at the same time, the SEC doesn't necessarily need to react to that. And if you think about what would be the situation that would prompt them to react, what would prompt the SEC to react is if the ACC, grants of rights deal was all of a sudden taken off the table. And all these schools in the ACC where now, hey, free game. You can negotiate with Florida State. You can have a conversation with Miami. You want to talk Clemson to coming in your conference? That's interesting. But Greg Sankey pretty much put the kibosh on any sort of imminent expansion, and I believe him when he says that. Now, like I said, though, if the ACC opened things up, that would be a totally different story, and I bet there are lawyers working on that case as we speak. But, you know, I think that where he's coming from makes a lot of sense, because the SEC is truly a super league, and it will be once Oklahoma and Texas join the conference.
So, again, we're all talking about preseason, and there's all sorts of moving parts. There's transfer portal, et cetera, recruiting, et cetera. And, you know, again, this is all preseason prediction, but the way you feel about the SEC and how deep this conference is, we know that there are good teams in the middle, but how far does it go, Connor? How deep is this conference of the 14 teams that are out there?
Well, let's think about this. So my SDS colleague, Matt Hayes, wrote about why he thinks that the SEC East is the best division in college football, the East, right? You know, we're talking about the division that has one SEC title in the last 13 years, and it was a Georgia team that actually lost to a West team in the national championship right. in 2017. So there are a lot of – and I think where this stems from and the confidence and the depth in the league is quarterback play. Quarterback play in the SEC is at its best since at least 2013 and probably goes back even further. That's how good these group of signal callers are. There are 7 to 8 fan bases in this conference who feel like they have one of the 10 best quarterbacks in all of college football, and I can't necessarily tell them that they're wrong. I mean, that's the crazy thing about the outlook at the position, the game's most important position coming into this year, which is very different than last year. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see kind of which quarterbacks can live up to those sky-high expectations, because that is, as we know, what sets the table for the entire program. And I think that there are a lot of programs right now that are feeling very confident because of who they have under center.
Is there a feeling in this, and again, I get it, I understood when LSU won a national championship under Ed Orgeron and Les Miles before, there might have been the same feeling. Is there a different feeling with Georgia winning the national? Like, Georgia is coming in, no pun intended, the top dog right now.
It is a little different. You know, I think we're all very used to Alabama coming off of a national championship.
Right.
We're not used to Georgia having to talk about what's next and repeating. And, you know, that's the conversation that they have earned. And it's going to be interesting to see how Kirby Smart reacts. You know, he went, it was the Texas High School Coaches Association speaking event. And he talked about how he was burnt out and he almost quit coaching. I mean, that's a crazy thing for a coach coming off of a national championship to admit, but it speaks to the grind and what's expected, and repeating is a grind. There's a reason we haven't seen a repeat national champion in a decade. There's a reason that we've only seen one preseason number one team in college football win a national championship in the last 17 years. It's hard, man. It's really, really hard. So will Georgia look like a team that's already kind of beat up before the season starts? I don't think so. But at the same time, don't be surprised if we're talking about that proverbial hangover in the middle of the season.
I know Billy Napier will speak today. He's a new head coach in the SEC coming from Louisiana. But Brian Kelly spoke Monday, and he comes from Notre Dame. And that's as high profile as you get outside the conference. Did he talk about the difference? I mean, he's been on the job a little bit now, but has he talked about the difference of Notre Dame and being the head coach there and then coming to this conference?
Yeah, you know, he talked about how he probably should have been in the SEC all along because of, you know, the SEC loves football, family, and food.
Yeah.
And Brian Kelly, like, he checks all three of those boxes. Look, he denied that Alabama, those games in which his Notre Dame team lost to them, the first being 2012 national championship, and then the other being the 2020 Rose Bowl, not the Cotton Bowl, even though it was played in Dallas. But losing those games, he said, did not make or break his decision to come to LSU. What I disagree with 100% is any notion whatsoever that, you know, he didn't come to the SEC to get more talent. He came to the SEC, and he came to LSU specifically to win a national championship. He's one of the best coaches in the country, but he couldn't do it at Notre Dame. And maybe Marcus Freeman will be able to, but he couldn't. And this is a program, Notre Dame, that has 2 wins against AP top 5 teams since 1999. All right, they've got 21 losses, 14 of them were by 3 scores or more. You can't tell me that Brian Kelly didn't see the writing on the wall and didn't see the potential opportunity to go to a place like LSU, which has 3 national championships this century. So I think Brian Kelly has a little bit of that, you know, that figuring out still to do. It was interesting seeing him interact and, you know, be being in his SEC surroundings, still going to take some getting used to, but at the same time, I think he's kind of built well to be able to succeed in this conference.
The SEC is so rich in tradition with games, even games that are not like the Iron Bowl or the Egg Bowl. Is there a concern that Texas-Oklahoma comes in, they have to do something with the schedule, and that we lose third Saturday in October, or the Deep South's oldest rivalry, or LSU and Ole Miss, some of these games, because scheduling may have to change, and you may not get this every single year now?
Yeah, I think we're heading in a direction, though, where I think we're going to get the 3-6 model. I think that's what's going to happen. That's in my opinion, more imminent now that the alliance is dead and it looks like playoff expansion will indeed happen in 2026. Again, that's just me connecting dots. But I do think that we're heading to a place in which we're going to see the league react to that. That's going to be the thing that kind of forces them into action. That was what I kept saying during the SEC meetings in Destin, is like, why does the SEC have to decide on a conference schedule model now? You know, yeah. They don't need to. Wait for everybody else to come up with this. You don't necessarily need to be the conference that has a 9-game conference schedule when you're the ones adding Oklahoma and Texas. And if we stay with a 4-team playoff, that's stupid. That's cannibalizing yourself. You don't want to do that. That doesn't make any sort of sense. And the SEC has never had a 9-game conference schedule, but I do think they will ultimately go to that. We're going to see more of these Power 5 games played in non-conference play as well, which is going to be awesome. And I'm really looking forward to that. But, yeah, I think we're going to head in the direction of 3-6 to be able to preserve those rivalries.
Yeah, because, again, you could see Georgia needing to play Florida in Jacksonville every year, division game. But they don't have to play Auburn, and Tennessee doesn't have to play Alabama. But the traditionalists will go crazy if they don't.
Right, exactly. And that's something Eli Drinkwitz, even somebody who has only been in this league this is his third year in the conference, and he spent a little bit of time at Auburn, of course, as well. But he's like, I want to see those games. I want to see that. That's when the SEC is at its best, and we need to be able to preserve these rivalries and do that. And I understand exactly where he's coming from. And even somebody like Mizzou, who doesn't have a ton of built-in rivalries, one of them being Arkansas. Sam Pittman's walking past me right now, so of course that subject just came up. But yeah, I look at this situation now, and I think to myself, this is an obvious decision. Now that we have this direction with the college football playoff, or I think we're going to have this direction, it'll make that much more sense to try and preserve those rivalries and have a true 3-6.
One really quick question, and I've always been fascinated. I've been to one SEC Media Day. I've been to a number of others when I lived out west. There's nothing like it. It's not even comparable. I've said, look, I've been to the Pac-12, I've been to the Mountain West, but when I was in Birmingham for the SEC Media Days, it was different. Why is it different? Why does the ACC, Big Ten, why do they bang it out over 2 days, quick interviews, and why does the SEC celebrate itself over four?
The SEC loves giving its teams a chance to shine, and I've been to Big Ten Media Days before a few times, and it's way different. I mean, the fanfare is not there. Sam Pittman, I'm watching him sign like 6 different autographs right now, and you know that's something that the fanfare is a little bit different in Hoover, in my opinion, than it is here. But at the same time, I do think that the spectacle of it and giving every team its chance to shine makes a lot of sense. Everybody kind of gives the SEC crap for having 4 days worth of media coverage, but at the same time, what else are we doing?
All right, good point.
No, it's no lie. They just had the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. There's a reason why they have the ESPYs this week. Okay, like there's nothing wrong with more college football coverage. Last I checked, it's talking season. Nobody does it better than the SEC.
Yeah, but a guy has to talk for a number of hours every day. I'm glad the SEC is having media days.
Hey, man.
You know? Connor, great stuff. We'll get you on later on to really, really preview these teams as camp opens up. Really appreciate it as always.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, man.
You got it. Connor O'Gard, Saturday Down South. Good stuff from the SEC Media Days. By the way, the ACC Media Days is going to go on today in Charlotte, so we keep rolling along. Big Ten is next week. All right, it's Tony D, Ron Culver, and it's Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks to Connor O'Gara, Saturday Down South on SEC Media Days. Yeah, it's we were just talking about the schedule, and yeah, I know the schedule is not the most biggest thing in the world, but when you are, one of the things about college football is being sort of these traditions. You don't really want to lose them. It's like the NFL can make changes and you go, oh, that would stink. But eventually you just live with it, right? You go, I get it. I can imagine being a St. Louis Cardinals fan in the 80s, right? And you're in the NFC East, right? And then the team moves to Arizona and you're like, oh, that stinks. But while you remember the rivalries with Dallas and the Giants, but you weren't really a part of it. Tampa Bay, remember when Tampa Bay was in the NFC Central, I think it was called? And they were outside of this Chicago, Detroit, Green Bay, Minnesota bubble. And then there was Tampa Bay on the side. And then they shifted the divisions around to make better sense. And you went, yeah, you could live with it. The SEC has really good rivalries, good rivalries. I know here living in Tennessee, and I'm not a Vols fan, but I know that Tennessee fans, even though they've lost all the time, the last, too many to count now, these games to Alabama, they like playing Alabama. They like the third Saturday in October. They love that. Georgia and Auburn play in what they call the Deep South's oldest rivalry. But they're non-divisional games. They're not going to be saved when you go to a new system. You've got to somehow, some way, restructure it. And tradition is a lot of college football, but even that's going away with everybody moving around. All of that stuff is thrown away. And sometimes these annual rivalries, they got to go too, because that's the way college football is building itself. Hour three coming up next. And guess what? We're going to go over the SBs a bit, because that is tonight and a couple of the categories that make sense and some of the categories that don't. We'll talk about that as Hour 3 gets rolling along on Sports Map Radio.